See, you just caught us moment before you were meant to come back to us. All right, we're live. It's Monday morning. It's the 11th of August, and Leanne's here with me. We've got Dr. Ken Resnick joining us in a short while. It's going to be fun to talk to him. Maybe we can also talk to him about these new ways of raising children and using AI and all kinds of other things. But we'll get into the five personalities, which I'm excited about, the new version of ChatGPT, which launched. And Leanne, of course, is on top of it. As long as you're not going to lie to us like you did last week.
I really hope I'm not lying.
Yeah, you better not lie.
This is from a good source.
Okay, well, Leanne Moll. Okay, let's go.
It's actually four ChatGPT 5 personalities, right?
Oh, okay.
So ChatGPT 5 is here, as we know, and this is basically a summary of them. So you choose whether you want the cynic.
Yeah.
You might want that.
I feel warm to the cynic, I won't lie. All right.
Dry, sarcastic, and unfiltered.
Right.
Offers practical advice with a side of side eye.
Okay.
Great for humor or for cutting through fluff.
Yeah, I like that.
Robot. That's emotionless, direct, and to the point. No extra words, just clean, accurate responses.
Also appeals to me. Both of those. Those are the kind of people I want as friends in real life. Mm. So I think if I'm going to have a ChatGPT secretary, it's going to be one of those.
Yeah.
Okay?
The fourth type is the listener. You won't like this one.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. I can tell what that is. That's a girlfriend.
Calm, warm,
except a girlfriend that talks back. Yeah.
Reflects your thoughts gently and adds emotional nuance to its replies.
Yeah, that's the kind of therapy that I would not enjoy either, which is one of the reasons I do like Dr. Hanan.
Who basically tells you to pull up your socks and try
harder. Well, he's so pragmatic, right? And and the listener is exactly the opposite of what most people need.
Exactly.
Most people shouldn't be listened to because they talk so much nonsense. Okay.
And then fourthly, we have nerd. So curious, excitable, deeply knowledgeable, explains things thoroughly, and loves sharing fun facts.
Okay, I don't know if I'd hate that entirely. So I'm thinking a combination for me of 1, 2, and 4. It's probably about right.
I wonder if you could do that. I'm sure you could.
Probably. You could probably instruct it, use 20% this, because it's very good when you give it actual number breakdowns. Right, you're talking to a machine. You're talking to a database. So you can tell it to put in, let's say I want 20% cynic.
Mm-hmm.
I want 30% of
robot.
The robot, and the rest can be the nerd.
Yeah.
No, I think that's
no
awesome.
Listener.
Because it's almost like if you look at your friends and you think, okay, this is a friend who I love talking to about what's in the news, politics, history, whatever it might be.
Mm.
This is a friend I like talking stupid shit with. That's a friend I love having deep, meaningful conversations about emotion with. And we all have those people in our lives, right? They fulfill the necessary, you do things for them emotionally or intellectually, and they do things for you in similar ways. So I think you actually break it down by percentage, and then it can give you exactly what you need. Maybe many people, what do you think your percentages are going to be? What do you think your breakdown will be?
I would go immediately to robot.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Almost exclusively?
I don't want... Okay, so here's an example. If you had to type in the prompt, why is the sky blue? The cynic would say, oh, you mean besides the fact that Mother Nature likes to mess with us? Fine. Sunlight hits the atmosphere.
Oh, no.
The shorter
okay.
blue wavelengths scatter more, blah, blah, blah. Happy
okay.
now?
No, you see.
See, I don't want that.
No, I'm put off cynic now after that answer.
Robot would be like, the sky appears blue due to Rayleigh scattering.
Yeah.
The wind, sunlight, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, that's
listener,
the right
that's
answer.
Such a great question, says the listener.
Oh, no. Okay, the listeners, I knew the listener would be terrible.
Kind of peaceful when you think about it, right?
Oh, okay.
And the nerd, oh, you've unlocked one of my favorite topics, the blue skies, thanks to blah, blah, and then says, fun fact, the same physics makes Mars's sunsets blue and ours red.
I'm 100% robot.
Okay, then now you've changed your mind.
I don't want any of those. I don't want any, like, I don't need a personality like that. The real people in my life provide the personality. This is a servant It is a servant, and I want it to have no personality.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I would choose. So how do you turn these personalities on? You open ChatGPT, start a new chat, and then click the sparkle or the star icon.
Okay, I'm doing it right now, Leanne.
Sometimes labeled style or personality. And you choose cynic, robot, listener, or nerd.
Start a new chat, and then I click on the little star. And what do I do here?
You can just choose. Are you sure you
come in the wrong place? Five? Yes, man. I've got that update. But okay. So where do I go?
Start a new chat?
Yes.
Did you see a star there?
ChatGPT 5. There's nothing else on the screen. Maybe it's already got instructions.
Maybe because you have told ChatGPT 4 what you wanted.
Maybe. Okay, I'll figure it out. I just want the robot.
Yes,
I've just decided the robot.
Wikipedia flatness. I don't need any personality.
Yeah, it's sort of like everything needs to be personalized these days. And actually, no. Like sometimes you want just the answers. Mm-hmm. I use it mostly for very practical day-to-day knowledge search engine type stuff and putting together documents and that kind of thing. So it's not going to be useful to me if it has a personality. I will add the personality for now until I become obsolete in that respect, which I don't think is close. But when I become obsolete, then I will ask you for a personality.
Yeah.
But until then, trust me, I got a lot of that to go around.
Yes, exactly.
I've pretty much built a life and a career out of it, so I'm not giving that up anytime soon. Gareth is talking more than the guests, says Mike V. Yo, it's called the Gareth Cliff Show. It's the one thing that's absolutely consistent.
It's in the name.
It's like a husband, you have to teach it how to treat you, says B. Ooh. There's so many things we could ask about that.
Mm.
By the way, a good question that was brought up here by, I think, Mapelo, who said there's a story in the news which is quite disturbing about this. So this kid was killed in a school shooting a while ago.
Yeah?
No. Joaquin something or another. And his parents, it's been about 5 years since he was killed in a U.S. school, in a school shooting. His parents went to, I don't know, ChatGPT, and they invented this AI version of their kid who that idiot journalist, what's his name? The guy who, he used to be on CNN, Jim Acosta is his name. Jim Acosta interviewed this AI dead kid.
Oh.
Okay. And everybody hates it. And then the dad got upset that everybody hated it. And he said, if you're arguing with the AI version of my dead son, then you are the problem.
Oy.
So let's just, I mean, we can unpack a whole lot around this. But I think it's very, very cool that the mom is using this as a coping mechanism for getting over her son's death. I think ultimately, probably not very good for anyone mental health-wise. To be getting over the death of your child by talking to an AI chatbot.
No.
I don't see happy outcomes in the long run for any of this.
I mean,
but I'm not a psychologist, so I just need to qualify that. And Jim Acosta, that fraud, interviewing the AI version of the kid, which is clearly just for political purposes. I mean, the kid's saying things like, well, we all need safe spaces and schools should be gun-free and obvious stuff like that. And then saying things like, you know, we need to ban weapons. I mean, that's political. So suddenly it's gone in a direction that we could have predicted anyway. The fact that Jim Acosta has decided that it is worth interviewing AI versions of dead people, I think this is the end of his career without putting too much of a fine point on it. I don't think Jim Acosta's got a lot more to do after this. He's going to find himself in very, very low demand as a result of this. So I'm glad you brought it up, Mapelo. But what a disturbing story.
Sure,
and the fact that the dad is upset that people are taking issue with Jim Acosta interview, it's just so dumb. Like he asks the AI, I only saw a little bit of it, so forgive me if I don't present this as well as it might be presented. He says to it, what's your favorite hero in you know, literature or movies. And he goes, my favorite hero is, what a great question, Jim. Thank you. My favorite hero is Luke Skywalker from Star Wars. So Jim Acosta goes, oh yeah, I love Luke Skywalker too. And then the AI dead person goes, yeah, he's such a perfect representation of a hero for the following reasons. It's like, it just, this is lame. So weird. And anyone who takes pleasure in listening to that kind of nonsense, it's nonsense. I mean, you know, you can predict immediately that it's AI. It's like you can still see, even on the really good versions of image generator, you could tell it's AI. And therefore, you can tell it's fake. And if you are happy to escape into fantasy, like a Marvel movie, great. But you have to be able to still distinguish that it's fake. I think it's tremendously deleterious to your happiness to confuse what is true and what is fake. That's where you start getting into a very, very patchy, dangerous world. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that anyone should be doing that. Congo Chris says that clip we played just before we took a break with the old people going around the chairs. Stop showing us clips from your old DJ gigs, Karen. I don't know what the class is called. Just heard they're teaching it in a university. Sangoma classes. Do you know anything about this?
No, I don't.
Hmm. Okay.
Sangoma classes.
I don't know anything about it either, so I'm not going to pretend I do. K9 says, Gareth and Ass are looking 65% better on this last Monday show ever. AI Ask Kisser personality engaged. Well, K9, you can stay. You know, we love nothing more than when people agree with us all the time. I mean, that's the whole reason to go to the comment section, right? Just because people agree with us. I don't think I've ever read a comment that just agreed with us. To prove the point that Dr. Hanan made earlier.
No, it usually offers more. It would say something like, I agree, the same happened to me, and blah, blah.
Congo Chris says, I want either a sassy gay or grumpy lesbian setting on my chat GPT. I'm sure you can ask it to. I mean, it could probably put that together, right?
I'm sure.
I think it could.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have a problem with that journalist if he pushed that bot to say politically incorrect things. He should have taken the interview seriously. Well, all they did was say how great each other were and how right each other were the whole way through the end. So it wasn't much of an interview at all. Next, they will get in an AI wife and make AI babies. Well, already you can see why this appealed to people. I brought it up while Dr. Hanan was on. People like being affirmed. So if you have a chat GPT version of a human that is telling you how great you are the whole time. For some people, that is all they want in life. Mm. You know, most people just want acknowledgement, affirmation, encouragement, belonging, some kind of, what would you call it? It's almost like a version of love that is provided by this bullshit machine.
Well, it's addressing your insecurities and your lack of confidence. It's calibrating you.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And that's for a lot of people, that's all they want. That's mostly what their social interaction is built around. So it would make sense to me that many, many people are going to be affected in the very worst way by this. And that's okay, because they would have been the same people who believed tabloid newspapers. They would have been the same people who believed when
the flat earthers,
yeah, or the Sangoma or whoever. I mean, these are people who will be persuaded. They're credulous and gullible people, and that's okay. You know what to do with those people. Sell them lotto tickets. It's awesome. Start a casino. Get them gaming on your Spinazonke aviator. That's what you do with those people, right? Make fucking money out of them. Don't be stupid. All right, we're gonna bring in our guest for the morning because I'm very excited to talk to him, and he's got far more intelligent and interesting things to say than us. Dr. Ken Resnick is a parenting expert and educational psychologist. He's the founder of the Smart Choice Parenting Program. He offers a contrarian approach Oh, look, they've walked right in front of my camera. That's just beautiful. No, no problem. It's all good. I was just giving you your intro, Doc. It's, don't worry. It's all good. Instead of child-centric, overly protective methods, he stresses that healthy child development relies on capable and responsible adults. So I think I'm probably going to spend a lot of the time just agreeing with Dr. Ken Resnick, but I am excited to have you here. And we've got lots of people who listen to us who are parents. I think every parent is trying their best. And I'm going to assume, like I do when I meet people, that they are doing the best job they possibly could. Obviously, I'm not always going to be pleased when I discover that the opposite is true. But for the purposes of this morning, let's take the assumption that most parents are trying their best. I don't think that's a bad way to start, right, Doc?
I have no doubt they're trying their best. Every parent tries their best. But as I liken it to baking a cake with no recipe. With the ingredients, we try our best.
Yeah.
But if the cake flops, we've done something wrong. So it's not a question of blaming parents. They're doing a job. There's no job description, no religion, no culture has got the full.
In other words, it is not a perfect system where you can come up with a perfect result.
100%. You can't have a perfect child or a perfect human being. And we're all a bit screwed up for one reason only. We brought up our parents. They try their best, but, you know.
Yeah, I think, though, that there are still so many people who are going around blaming their parents for everything, even well into their 30s and 40s. And I think that's insane.
Hmm. You see, it's a cop-out because we've always got choice. So even if we had a hard childhood, we've still got a choice going forward. We can work on ourselves. We can be positive. We can speak to other people. And that's it. We've always got that choice. And people don't realize it. And it's easy to blame parents.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, better choices.
Didn't the old psychologists and
it's the way we were taught.
The first thing you do is like, what happened to you when you were 5 or when you were 10? And
what sort of upbringing did you have?
Your mom say that hurt you and scarred you so badly that you're still bearing the post-traumatic stress disorder around this? I mean, it really was very hard on parents. And it was totally forgiving of the child, even if the child was a grown adult who needed to grow up, right? And part of what you are involved in is giving people, like, it seems to me, and I don't mean any disrespect by this, because I think that people like you are rare. You're someone who sees things as they are and speaks about them in an honest way and tells people the uncomfortable truth, which ChatGPT doesn't do. But it seems like common sense to me, a lot of what you say.
It is common sense. So what we've got to, and it's been told you, the problem, half of the problem, more than half the problem, is that in the training of all professionals, there's nothing on parenting. And it's mind-blowing because they leave it out, and it's like taking a car in for a service and they never look at the engine. Nobody's ever actually understood that. Because if we're born, a little kid's born, totally dependent on an adult to take it into adulthood. They can't bring themselves up. That adult is usually their parent and the educator. So, and that thing is ignored. So if you've got a parent that doesn't instill anything into the child, that's got no morals, no values, what are these things we dependent on a parent? We're not born with a religion. We're not born with self-esteem. We've got the potential to get at self-esteem.
That is such an important point and something which I think I'm identifying more and more as a problem in society, is that people are not building a moral scaffolding for their kids. They are trying to give their kids resources in terms of food, clothing, toys, technology, sports equipment, whatever. They are putting them into very expensive schools if they can afford them. In fact, parents will go into debt. They will mortgage the property in order to send their kids to the best possible school they can. All of this very laudable. But they're not spending the time giving their children the moral foundations that they need to grow up to become good citizens. And by that, I don't mean listening to the government. I mean letting an old lady cross the street without having to go on her own. I mean not breaking the shop front, stealing the stuff in the display window. I mean having manners, looking people in the eye. We were talking about this earlier and we sounded like real grumpy old people for a little while. But these are the building blocks of society. And parents, if you're going to blame parents, I think they deserve at least half the blame. The major contribution they are not making the way that perhaps other generations who've come before have made it, is that they're not helping to build that moral scaffolding.
But they don't know what they're doing. Because the, and I tell you what the problem is.
Why don't they know what they're doing?
I'll tell you now. Because I ask professionals and parents. Kids today are very impulsive, demanding instant gratification.
Yeah.
And I ask them why. Nobody gives me the right answer. They're born impulsive. A little one-year-old toddling up to you, you got a pen in your hand, they grab it. So what is missing? Manners. Kids don't have manners. They'll go to the fridge, they'll turn the TV, they'll leave a mess around. Now, if we don't address that, they're going to grow into adults.
Shitty.
They lack empathy. Mm. They're only about themselves. That's why you can't get them off PlayStation. They don't know how to self-regulate, self-discipline, social skills. Mm. Everything goes out the window. And for some reason, nobody's ever brought that up. Because that is the key. Because that impulsivity, we can sort out from the time they won. As I said, when a little one-year-old comes, grabs you, say to him, talk. Say talk. Doesn't want to say talk, and have a little cry. When it's ready to say talk, fine. Takes the pen, doesn't grab it. When he takes a pen, say ta again. Now it slows kids down. The same as mom, may I have a yogurt? Not now, it's supper time. Instead of the kids just going and taking. They go to their parents' handbags.
When did it go wrong? Because we were talking about the other day about how our parents, I used to get claps if I was just in the way. Okay, like if there were a bunch of adults and I was in the way, I was just standing there instead of there, I'd get a clap. And we were talking about this on Friday at a family thing. And my cousin said to me, yeah, I remember getting claps for being in the way as well. Now you've suddenly got Gen Z who were like, why should I work? Why are you importuning me by making me go to work? I don't have to. This is a punishment from hell. What did I do to deserve this? Why are you being so cruel to me that I must work? Right? It's madness.
It's total madness. Because some genius came with this thing that gentle parenting and compassionate parenting.
Yeah. That's where the problem came from.
And life is hard.
Yeah.
It's not easy. But what are you doing trying to protect kids from disappointments? They don't get over things.
Yeah.
They missed the last ice cream at a party. We've got to take them to Disneyland to feel better.
Yeah.
Get over it.
They need 3 months of therapy because they broke their Mari biscuit.
And the mom's giving them therapy as well.
Yeah.
So you're not allowing kids to get over things. This is life. You've got to get over things. So the skills you need in life are not there. The social skills, we're protecting them. We don't let them go and play anywhere. We're scared. We're scared to leave them at parties. We've got to sit there.
Yeah.
So we're giving them no choice to be independent because kids are born totally dependent. I always say they're born potential serial killers because they've got nothing. They've got no empathy.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I had an interesting discussion / debate between Sacha Baron Cohen's father, who is a specialist in autism. I wish I could come up with his proper name and title, but I know he's Sacha Baron Cohen's dad, and he's a professor of, I don't know, psychology or social anthropology or whatever it might be. And then Jordan Peterson said that he thinks two-year-olds are basically psychopaths. They don't really care about anyone but themselves. They want something, they don't get it, they scream, they impulsively walk into the middle of the road unless you hold them. They just do like crazy things. And then you need to socialize them. You need to teach them patience. They need to have manners and be taught to ask for things. And they must understand when they can't have things. Do you largely subscribe to that model?
100%. Because at the end of that, I've got a little saying that I use. If they can, they must. A little three-year-old can dress themselves. They don't want to dress themselves. You know, I've got some various techniques with this.
Yeah.
They can eat with a knife and fork.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a little five-year-old, mommy's still feeding them.
Mm.
All of these things parents don't understand. And can I just bring up an example, that I had in my room? You know, the kids come in there and I've got a little bowl of Dearmint easy-to-open wrappers. So there are two things that kids do when they come into my room. The one is they sit on mom's lap. And I say to them, listen, you got a choice. You can sit on my lap or next to mom.
So what
do you think they do?
Next to mom.
Absolutely. But then I've got the sweets. Very few go and just take a sweet. If they do, I say, hey, whose sweets are those? They quickly put it back and hide behind mom. But most of them walk around the bowl. And then I whisper to mom. And I say to him, what does he want? He wants a sweet. He's got to ask me. So they're really loath to ask me, but the last kid I saw was quite cute. He'd walked around the table about 5 times, whispering to mom at the end of the session. He knew he was lost out. So he sort of mumbled, you know. So I said to him, may I have a sweet, please? Fine. Takes the sweet. What do you say? Thank you. He gives the sweet to mom. I see he's 6 years old. I said, why are you giving mom the sweet? He says, I can't open it. I said, put it back. He opened it in 2 seconds.
Of course.
Yeah. What does he do with the wrapper? Gives it to mom.
And
he
has what an interesting thing to observe. Yeah. I mean, in just the simple act of having the sweets on the table in your, and setting up rules,
yeah.
You get to see the very best and worst of these children. Exactly. And that's how they will turn out as adults, unless there are interventions by the parent or by the educator or whoever it is along the way. So what can you tell me about the most important things that especially young children need to learn, like 2 to 3 year olds?
2 to 3 year olds need to learn. First of all, parents need to know how to stay calm. They've got to know how to make a problem the child. The moment, just to give an example, kids are brought into the world, they don't know who you are. All they know is that you're going to guide them or take them into life. They need to feel secure. If you go into the Amazon, we're dependent on that guide. If you see something and he panics, the whole group panics. So the moment parents start screaming and shouting, the person that the child believes can do the job is going to become insecure, maybe play up and this sort of thing.
What do kids do when they think that the person who's in charge is actually a lunatic?
They take over. They'll manipulate
that,
the
is that so? So a child's natural impulse is to see the adult losing control and try to take control themselves.
Exactly.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Now that, and that's when people don't realize that. And they're tough as nails. I always say to parents, we treat them like they're made of glass. They're tough. They get over things. Mom's having a breakdown. Kids had a big fight with her. He wakes up. It's another day. Mom's depressed. You know, and the kid goes for therapy and mom's having a breakdown.
That's so interesting. I'm like a kid then because I get over shit very quickly.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Because you got to, again, it's a choice. But we don't let kids get over it. We're told to sit there, look them in the eyes. Ask him how they're feeling. The kid doesn't know what you're talking about. The next thing, they're going to look for a gap for attention. Yeah. And they'll play up. Whether it's a little tall tummy, they don't want to go to school, but they got attention. So no attention is some attention, or negative attention, is better than no attention for the kid.
Right.
And that's the thing. They interrupt mom while she's talking on the phone. They got no manners. It's quite unbelievable to see the dynamics. And nobody's helping the parents. And the fact that that is left out of it. A child's issues, a personality, by the way, one of the things we've got misinformation. Nothing's genetic in the, and they've done research on that, in personality disorders. And parents are believing it is because they've been told it is. So they've got all sorts of new labels, generalized anxiety disorder. So they'll go
I mean, Dr. Resnick, isn't it true that parents will take any excuse other than an excuse that puts the blame on them?
You see the
they'll say, well, my kid has a condition. There's some kind of psychological condition, or it's got a genetic problem, or it was had too much sugar when it was one and now its brain is rotten, or whatever. As long as it's not me.
Yeah, but the problem started at the universities. They're training the professionals with nothing on parenting, and they're working with kids. So the advice a lot of the professionals are giving parents is nonsense. It's come from nowhere. I say to parents who are 3 different professionals, what do I do as a parent? They'll get 3 different answers.
Mm.
And that's not okay because you've got to understand, say nothing rather than give parents, you know, nothing much you can do. They've got ADHD and it's all symptomatically diagnosed. You know, they've got 8 little symptoms and we're not, and you can deal with it. There's a way of dealing with it in terms of how to manage your child. Shame, otherwise it's a cop-out. Shame he's got ADD, so he didn't watch another half hour of TV. Keeps him quiet.
Are there major, I've got so many questions for you. Are there major differences between girls and boys and the way that you need to parent them, or is it exactly the same?
It's exactly. I brought up 3 stepkids after I'd developed the program. And the twins were 3 when they were girls. When I met my wife. And I mean, we've done the most unbelievable job. We had no sibling rivalry. I mean, she was a little ADHD plus. They've never had 1 assessment. Calm home. Maybe it wasn't that great, but calm home. And it was just amazing. We had structure, we had rules, we gave them choices. And to see what you can do, if you know what you're doing, like with any job, it's easy. And if you don't know what you're doing, it's very difficult. That's the problem.
I'm interested that you've used the word calm quite a lot, because this is a big thing that I think is missing in so many disordered households. And again, I don't have kids, so I'm not speaking with experience in this, but I've seen a lot of kids being raised by friends of mine, family. I see them in all kinds of situations. And also, you can see that some adults must have grown up in disordered households in order to be the kind of disordered adults that they are. And this word calm that you used a couple of times, why is that so important?
Because it keeps you in charge. Let me give you an example. How to stay calm. You make it the child's problem. For instance, the kid doesn't want to brush his teeth. You don't want to brush your teeth? No problem. You don't have to brush your teeth. But one-year-olds don't brush their teeth. And you know, mommy's quite excited to have another one-year-old in the house. So you never have to brush your teeth again. But remember, one-year-olds don't watch TV. They play with baby toys. They eat baby food. And they go to bed after supper. So it's totally your choice. Would you rather be one and never brush your teeth again or six and brush your teeth? You don't have an argument. They have choose six and that's it. And if they don't, they have the baby food because they've chosen it. We know that you get rid of the word punishment. They made the choice. Every choice has got a consequence. And it stops you banging heads with the kids. So you've got to preempt from sleeping in their bed, not wanting to eat their food. It's how we put it across to the child. And we don't talk to kids properly.
Yeah.
We don't talk like us. We talk to kids differently than any other human being.
And you must not baby talk to a kid.
Oh, no.
Right? I don't mean you, but you to like a six-year-old.
Oh, my darling.
Terrible idea.
Honey, the kid's driving the parent mad. She said, darling.
Yeah, darling, please stop smacking every piano key.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. How should you talk to that child?
You talk to it like you talk to anybody else. But you've got to know, they've got to know who's in charge. And you give them choices. You've got to have structure and you've got to be consistent.
Yeah, but you see the problem, Ken, is that the parents aren't even in charge of their own lives sometimes. Yeah. They're not actually in charge of themselves, let alone the household. So you've got a dad or a mom who's, for all intents and purposes, totally out of control. Mm. They don't know whether they're a teapot or a hockey stick half the time. They have no plan for the day. They don't necessarily have any list of goals or ambitions and things that need to be achieved. They don't have stability and security in themselves. They're a chocolate fireplace, and then they're going to what, raise the kid?
But you see, what they don't understand is a job. That's all it is.
It's a job.
Take emotions out.
Right.
They're the CEOs. This is their little business. And like then you don't have a
And the child is the product.
And the child is the product, and they're human beings. But at the end of the day, you've got to manage them. You've got to create a structure, a routine. There've got to be consequences. Like when you run a business, it's very similar. But you've got to know just how to stay calm so that the kid trusts you. And the moment you've got to start shouting at a kid, trust breaks down. And that's when they start playing up. So the dynamic, and nobody's actually helping the parents understand. And then dad might have this way of parenting, mom that.
All right.
And then she wraps herself around the kids for emotional security. Dad's the whole dynamic these days. I always say, you only see happy families on Facebook these days.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody, but kids are out of control.
But, I mean, surely there's another part, and to go back to common sense, there's a part of this that is just kind of obvious. I mean, really, really dumb 16th century peasants managed to raise capable children, and they became capable adults. And ta-da, we're here in 2025 because those people managed to survive to adulthood and procreate and probably add a little bit of value to the world. So how hard could it be? Has parenting become so complicated because there's so many people who are in on the act? Like, here's some advice, here are the pills, here's a therapist, here's a guidebook.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly there are 2,000 different influences on every mom and dad, and it's like overwhelming for them. Yeah, they don't trust their own gut anymore.
For sure, but people, the therapists, with all due respect, are taking advantage of this. A lot of people are making a lot of money.
Yeah.
And the problem is parenting is an irrational activity. We rational people, human beings are rational. One and one adds up to two. One and one never adds up to two with parenting. You're kind, you're sweet, you give them what they like, they're going to be happy, that little monster.
Yeah.
So life's tough. So you've got to give them the skills to become independent, to know how to handle that playground, to know how to behave in public, to have empathy. All of these things, these characteristics that we need to feel good about themselves. At the end of the day, if you've got a kid that's with high self-esteem, that's independent, that's great. But today the focus is on making the child or keeping the child dependent. And that dependency is the key problem where mom's got to run around them.
Why is that? Why would parents want to have a child that's dependent? Why are we making kids? And Leanne and I were talking about this in any number of shows you can go back on. Again, it's interesting that we've got all these adults who are dependent on everything, dependent on technology, dependent on their partner, dependent on their work colleagues, even their friends, to the degree that they're filling a, there's a hole somewhere in their soul that they're trying to fill with this dependency.
But they're told to be there for their child. What they haven't been told, they need to be there to manage their child, not to run around the child. And one of the things that I've observed as well now, kids are born to play on their own. There's a huge number of kids now that don't want to do maths.
Mm.
They've got no logical ability.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it starts like a little 5 or 6 month old sitting, playing in a playpen. Give them some blocks, those little circles you put in other circles.
Yes.
Kid will work out for itself. If I put more than 4 blocks, it's going to fall down.
Mm-hmm.
They're starting to use their imagination.
Calculate.
But now parents are doing all of that.
Mm.
So you've got a lot of kids that their fantasy, they can't plan yet.
But it's also, it's trend-based as well.
Yes.
But so I like to call them almond moms or crunchy moms. You know, there's a competition between the moms on who spends more time with their child.
Exactly.
There's a competition on who feeds them the best, most nutritious food. How, you know, are we spending quality time together? I don't just let my child go off and play by itself. You know, that's what's happening. I'm seeing it all over. I can hear it. I have neighbors raising a three-year-old, and I can hear when they have people over, everyone's like mollycoddling these children.
But you see, if you, and I saw it, I had a client with a six-year-old, got a lovely doll's house for a birthday. Didn't know what to do with it. Couldn't think of a little imaginary tea party. Just looked nice. Kids have got a million toys. They play with them for 5 minutes, and they leave.
Yeah.
And so that using their imagination is too hard. So now I do a lot of like assessments. Those logical processes at so many kids that you need for maths are not there. And a lot of it's because you're not allowing them to just create, work it out for themselves when they're young.
I mean, I remember growing up, even though my mom was eventually at a point where she was able to work from home, that door was closed. Hmm. I was an only child.
Exactly.
And I was told to entertain myself.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's something important about being a child and being bored.
Mm.
Like, you have to actually learn to fight the demon of boredom as a child. Mm. And the only, and especially for really clever kids, they will be bored because they need to occupy their brains. But the best way for them to become even better and more useful is for them to conquer that boredom themselves by finding a thing that fascinates them. And no one can do that for them. Not the mom, not the dad, not the teacher. And you have to be bored first to get to that.
But accepting, we entertain kids.
Yeah.
The TV, we're entertaining them.
Yeah.
Were you bored as a kid?
All the time.
Nothing to do.
No, but I mean, yeah,
but
I would
but
say
the
I
kid,
was...
With the kid, little theater, he bored.
No, I would say I was bored, but then... My mother would either send me outside or give me a club, and then I'd find something to entertain myself.
That's right. But look what they do today. They put them in front of the TV.
Yeah.
And then they get
from an
time
early
the
age,
quiet.
Right?
Very early.
Much too early for their brains to be able to cope with it.
And you know, it messes up everything from the occupational therapy, their posture, and the manner of speaking. I also ask parents, why are so many kids in speech therapy these days? Nobody gives me an answer. Kids don't
it's
talk.
TV.
They whine, mumble, and nag. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And all you got to say to kids, listen, sweetheart, I've gone deaf. Do you want to go to your room and practice how to speak properly and then come and ask me? Or do you want to ask me?
Giving them a choice.
Yeah, but not only that, rather than, you can avoid so much therapy by just knowing what to do.
Mm.
Kids don't sit up. They do this.
Yeah.
And it affects the way they talk. It's an impulsivity. These things are all connected.
And they won't, no one, I'm not going to hire people who sit like that.
Yeah. And all kids sit like that.
I'm not going to hire, I don't even want to talk to people like that. If I see you in a public place and you're sitting like this, I don't want anything to do with you.
All
full stop. You might be Einstein. and I'm not interested in meeting you.
Exactly. I did a funny story. It was only yesterday, actually. I had a family, and there was the one kid who was a bit of a naughty kid. And he was sitting there. We did all the structures, and eventually he said, you know, when are we going home? I said, if you're going home, if you can sit in that chair 5 minutes without fidgeting. He couldn't make 1 minute.
Yeah.
And he was like this all over the couch, yeah. flopping all over. It was mind blowing.
But those people are now they're in the workforce.
Exactly. But you remember the workforce, the resilience is not there. They want to be managing directors within a week.
Straight away.
Yeah. And you're not letting them kids battle. There's no grit. And at the end of the day, why? Because they're so dependent. They give up easily. Mom helped me with my homework, all of that stuff.
All right. So we've now decided that there are all of these factors that you've brought up, some of which I've found fascinating and some of which are amazing because they're common sense, but I go, oh, wow, it's such a breakthrough thing to hear that because you've experienced this is what you deal with every day. So we're not going to assign blame here, but what can we do to correct all of this? What do you think is the appropriate age, for example, that parents should allow their kids to start interacting with these screens, whether it's an iPad or they can have their own phone? I've heard from parents who I think are doing the best job they can, and that is subjective, but I think these parents are getting it right largely. They refuse to let their kids have their own phones until they are 16 at least. Do you think that's probably a good age?
The kids are watching their friends' phones.
At like 10.
They're watching the porn. They're doing a lot of things behind their parents' back because all their friends have got phones.
Yeah.
The key to it is how do we get kids to self-manage? So from a young age, if you're going to give a three-year-old, and to me, kids under the age of four should only watch a big TV. Because a kid of two, and they say it affects their eyes as well, you have a look watching a tiny cell phone.
They don't develop depth perception.
And at the end of the day, and they're not sitting up properly. No. They're flopping all over the show. So, and the same with iPads. So at the end of the day, but if there's a TV, they've got to sit up. If they flop, it means they want to go to their room. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're teaching them from a young age the right thing because their posture goes and everything else. So at the end of the day, this is what we've got to try and help parents how important it is. Don't miss a beat with the manners. Make sure they're talking to you properly. They're sitting up when they're eating with a knife and fork. Instead of 3 years of OT, these kids go to, but nothing much changes because nobody's actually helping the parents.
Yeah, Leanne just went, ugh.
Oh, that's so exactly. irritating.
It's so irritating. So what are the most recurring problems that you're faced with when parents come to you and say, I need help. I can't manage this. It's such a disaster. My kid is a mess. Or I'm a bad parent. Because a lot of parents do take responsibility. Yeah. So let's be fair too. Those are probably the ones who are coming to you. But so what are the most regular and repetitive problems that you encounter?
They're anything these days. They're not coping. They pretend. And it's quite interesting. They'll say some things about their kid and then always feel bad thinking, I'm going to think their kid's naughty. And they'll always say, but he's a good kid. You know?
Yeah, well.
So at the end of the day, I said, no. You do, and I generalize a lot because I don't want them to feel.
Yes.
I said, this is what we found generally with kids that are not cooperating. They tend to opt out. They only like to do what they like to do. That if they can't win, they'd rather not play. Mm-hmm. They don't take challenges. All of these sort of things. They're too dependent. And then the parents will acknowledge that. We're just doing too much for kids. They never have to sweat about anything. They've just got to have a little. And then we're told to spend time. And we lie in their bed with them and we talk about politics.
I can't imagine my mom or dad lying
but this is the sort of it's the sort
never.
Of nonsense that they're told to be there, and it's just been ridiculous. They've got to parent their child. They've got to be a manager. That's what they've got to do, not run around their child. These mothers are finished. They're worn out, but they don't look like, you know, and because the kids are.
But I think we live in such a unique. It's a bit of a crossover, South Africa, in so many ways, because we do have parents who are doing that. They're in their kids every waking moment, right? They're making decisions for them about simple stuff like how much milk to put in their Rice Krispies. And these kids are coddled and they're helicopter parented to death. But then we've also got parents who just have left their kids to be raised in the wild. There are parents in this country who have absolutely no interest in forming their children's basic foundations. They just, you know, as soon as they can walk out on the street with you, get out there, make it happen and hustle. And if you can't have a job before you're 10, then I'm going to sell you to the highest bidder. You know, they are. I mean, like parenting goes from the sublime to the ridiculous in South Africa. What happened to the basic idea of the middle ground, trying your best but not overdoing it? What's responsible for this?
I think the university, to be honest with you, they all of a sudden they got these different sort of therapists where the whole idea was there's nothing much you can do as a parent. They got ADHD or opposition defiance. Only we can fix it. They need medication. The parents have been given that message that it's not them. And then they need to be referred, shown they've got autism, which is a spectrum. Nobody knows what causes these things. And I'm not saying they don't have autism.
Mm-hmm.
It's symptomatically diagnosed, all of these things.
Yeah.
And often there's a lot of guesswork. Well, what does a parent do if they're not helped? They make allowances. Shame he's got ADHD, so let him watch another half hour of TV. Oh, he's jumping up and down. Well, he's ADHD. So it's an excuse for not having to do anything. Put down boundaries, consequences, spell out rules, all of that stuff. The parents aren't being helped with that. So they're parenting sort of trial and error rather than understanding what they've got to do.
Yeah, well, look, I do have ADHD.
And what's it feel like?
And my parents certainly didn't know.
What's it feel like, Leanne?
It was certainly undiagnosed.
Just pull your mic a little closer.
Yeah, but okay. I think it's an advantage because I just had to do whatever everybody else did growing up. And I had to find my own solutions.
All right, so let me tell you, because I've had quite a lot of success with it. ADHD is symptomatically diagnosed. But kids are still making choices. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
So it's not like they have brain damage and they start tap dancing. They do understand. Now if you've got a mom that's jumping up and down with an ADHD kid, mothers with ADHD kids themselves are very anxious. So yeah, your principal caregiver, of course, without realizing it. And then dad's also having a hard time. Then the kid's sleeping in their bed. So, you know, what the intimate life's going to be like. So at the end of the day, there's a huge stress that just filters through. But what I found the key, because I had a lot of success, is that the common feedback I get from parents is the house calms down. And I try to work out if the house calms down, it's because the parents have calmed down. The kids calm down. Now, something happens in that connection with parents that helps the child calm down. And it's the way we talk to kids. And I had a very fast, can I give you a case study? Because it was really quite fascinating. Now, the kids that poo in their pants, called encopresis. I had a little 11-year-old, never used the toilet. At school, at home.
Poo in his pants the whole time.
Poo all the time. And she was already old enough to
hide. I know adults like that.
Yeah, I know. They're full of it, you know. So what happened is that the same thing, I got involved with the parents, told them what they do. And the parents are finished. They'd have a kid doing that. They become like bloodhounds. They've taken them everywhere. And if you ever look at the research, nobody knows what to do about this. Anyway, so the little kid sorted out, and I said to her, listen, sweetheart, the good news is going to be able to pee in your pants forever. Nobody's going to say one word. It's totally your job. And I use the same thing what I did before. But you know what? One-year-olds pee in their pants. And I use the same thing. So if you want to go back to grade R, eat the baby food, etc. It's totally up to you. Nobody's going to get worried about it. Nobody's going to be upset. You must decide. You want to go back to grade R or would you rather be 11 and not pee in your pants? No, she was going to be 11. Within a day, she had stopped. But what was interesting, I'd learned more from that. She went to her mom and she said, Mom, I'm so pleased that I'm peeing my pants. Which meant there was some in that communication with these frustrated parents that was triggering something. And it was just amazing. And she was old enough to understand. And it was really
that's interesting.
That something that changes in the way we connect.
I wonder what that could have been that changed her. I mean, obviously your question to her is the catalyst. But what could have made it impossible for her to just learn that at the age that it was appropriate to learn to use the loo? Was it a chaotic household?
Yes, the household's in chaotic.
Okay,
and then
so
they start.
They shout at each other. There's noise. There's no calmness.
And the parents then pretend to be calm. And the kids, they got to check on the kids' brooks every day. It's a nightmare. And then they take them everywhere. They're spending money and nothing works. works for a while, but it doesn't work permanently.
But basically, they've got to just calm down.
It. You won't have those problems if you're doing the job.
What is the role in your explanation and your understanding of child rearing, parenting? What is the role of discipline, and when do kids learn to self-discipline?
It's from birth. You've got to have routine. There's like this little kid that wants to grab something and they can't get it. I'll give you an example. I had a mom. She phoned me just actually about 3 days ago. Her 7-month-old goes nuts. She's got to have the mother there all the time, and she screams and screams and screams. The mom didn't know. And I just said to her, look, she's become far too dependent on you. But how would you manage it? So all you got to do, that's 7 months old, is when she cries, it means she wants dad. And you've got to stay calm. Dad comes in. Where the kid will learn, if I'm with mom, I've got to not cry. So they're starting to learn at a young age because they can't express themselves, but that's a consequence. So the moment there's that screaming, shouting, oops, dad, come in, and mom and dad are calm. Not mom, I've just had enough of this child, and carrying on like that. Because the moment kids see that you've lost it, they put their boots in, I can tell you. And we're not knowing how to do that, staying calm. And I mean, parents say to me, gee, they can't believe how their kids changed. I said, no, you've changed. Kids don't change. When the parents change and they know what they're doing, there's change for the kids, which is interesting. Yeah. And today it's all about the kids.
All right, so the real reason I brought you here was Leanne is obviously not a child anymore, but what can we do? I mean,
this. What did she like to do? It's her child.
Well, I mean, you heard about the ADHD. But
you see, even with that, it comes down to a choice. It's not, and that's how I have to speak to myself at home. I give myself a choice. You can either do the washing or you can unpack the dishwasher.
Yeah.
Which one's it going to be?
Yeah.
Not you must unpack the dishwasher, then you must do the washing, then you must do that. You give yourself choices as you go along.
That's a cool game to play.
But when you're a kid, you can also have a choice. I mean, if they're starting to do that, boy, you want to scream and shout with pleasure, but only in your bedroom. When you're feeling better, you come out. So you talk to them properly, not that stoning, that scream thing, or not go and watch the TV.
Right.
Because if the house is calm, you minimize ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And the one twin was definitely an ADHD when I met my wife. And it was unbelievable what we were able to do. And they all doing amazingly well now. And it wasn't because we were special, but we made it easy.
To wrap this up, because I see we're out of time here, and I'm sure people are going to want to hear more from you, so we must find out where we can get the info and where people can contact you if they need to. There's bound to be parents who are going, oh my God, I need all the help from this man I can get. How do you know you've won as a parent? Like, what's the end? We said there's no perfect formula, and I agree with you. There's no perfect child. There's no perfect parent. Nobody is going to get it right 100% of the time. But what do parents say when they feel like they've done the best job possible? Or what do they see in their child? Like, what's the end game? What are the victory conditions?
The end game, we mammals. Mammals bring their young up to go into life. Be independent, cope. That is what our job is. We've got to teach kids to fly. So the thing is, where they're going, without feeling guilty, how much we've done for them, how little they appreciated us, etc. Because that's a horrible thing. And that's what we able to succeed with the twins. I mean, they went into life self-motivated. I'm not married anymore. They don't feel any guilt. I didn't lay anything onto them.
Right.
They were free to be themselves.
Don't burden your children with your
unconditional love.
But if they can be independent adults, you can go and make the world a little bit better.
Yes, but you don't want to be a mother. Yeah, but you don't want to be a mother anymore that's got to go and visit her every day. and then drive the poor daughters feeling so guilty. And then the husband wants to kill the mother-in-law. And we
but
have
I,
all of this.
I know lots of people who have a guilt-type relationship with their parents. And that's really awful.
And it can go
shocking.
On and on and on.
It ruins it.
Until your parents are old.
Yeah. But that damages you for life. You know, you don't realize if you lack confidence, if your parent neglected you, no self-belief, wanting to, scared, all of those sort of things. It all comes from very dominating parents that are judgmental.
So where can people get hold of you if they want some of this excellent advice and they want to bring their kids to you?
Well, would you?
I mean, you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about that before we give out the details. You've been doing this for years. You've helped thousands of kids.
Parents.
And, well, yeah. Parents and kids.
No, the kids listen, automatically.
The kid you say will come right automatically.
The kids automatically come right. It's unbelievable. I'm telling you. It's like there's some magic thing. And what I want to do, what I'm trying to do, you know, this. You've heard of neurodiversity, this latest thing.
Yes.
We won't go about the brain. So the kids have an EEG.
Yeah.
And then the therapist is supposed to think like the kid's thinking because their wiring's gone a bit wrong. And the idea is if we can think how they're thinking, they want to learn. Where they got that stuff from, I don't know, because Doc, learning is a choice.
Surely this is a problem because they've determined what mental health looks like.
But I don't like that word, mental health.
No. But I'm saying here in a very general sense, they've told you that anything outside of feeling this way is probably a bad thing. And anything outside of, I mean, there used to be this problem that when we were at school, Leanne, the kid who couldn't concentrate in class, before they'd figured out ADHD or ADD or any of that stuff, you were the gifted kid. You were just given more work. Mm. You were basically given extra school. You had to stay a little bit longer and you had to go to extra maths or whatever. Just keep your mad head busy, right? So we probably had to do it. I had to do it.
Yeah.
And you still wouldn't concentrate. You still would be distracted by everything. But they just gave you more to do and claps if you didn't do it.
Yeah. But you see, the underlying anxiety was hectic with that kid. You see, and one of the things
I didn't have anxiety though. I just got used to the clubs.
Yeah, but that's a pleasure. If you enjoy being clubbed,
burnt the cigarettes.
Exactly.
But what am I going to say? So I've had quite a lot of success with these neurodiverse kids, which is really interesting because I really like some research done. Because the only thing that changes with them is the parents calm down. Now, if the kids are calming down, something's changing in their brain. Because they see there's something wrong with that. And they do know that the brain networking can change. That they've shown with neuroscience.
You see, you've already helped us for free this morning.
Yeah.
By telling us about the calm thing.
Yeah.
That's so important.
That's it. And it's unbelievable. So there's something the way we talk to kids that calms them down. I don't know what it is exactly, but it's like...
And a calm kid is going to turn out to be a better adult.
Absolutely. Because they'll handle it. They're making decisions. They don't have that anxiety. They don't have this not coping with life sort of thing. They deal with disappointment. You know?
All right, where can people get hold of you?
So, have a look at my website, which is smartchoiceparenting.co.za.
Smartchoiceparenting.co.za.
Yeah, and there's quite a lot of stuff there. All my details are there as well, my phone number.
Good. Okay. Well, we can just send people to the website. That's the best thing to do. Smartchoiceparenting.com.
And thank you very much.
.co.za. Sorry. Okay, there we go. .co.za. Thank you so much for your time. And we appreciate you getting up and coming to join us so early in the morning on this cold Monday.
Yeah, no, it's
We will see you on a Friday soon.
Yes.
It's going to happen. It starts from next week. And thank you for joining us this morning. And thank you for all the very, very funny things that have been said in the last half hour in the comments section. I haven't been able to get to any of those because I had so many questions for Dr. Resnick myself, but we'll get to them. And as you know, we'll pick up the slack on Wednesday morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. Thank you, Flex. Thank you, Getsy. And thank you to you. We'll see you on Wednesday.